Hey, this is Brandon McManus, Denver Broncos Super Bowl champion, and you listen to The Scoop on AlScoop.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to The Scoop. This is Season 6, Episode 6. I'm John DiCarlo. Sam Cohn and Sam Newman are with me as always. We have a great guest for you this week. If you're a Temple fan, you know him as one of the best defensive tackles in the American and really one of the better defensive tackles in the entire country, and that is Ifeanyi Maiyaye. Thanks so much for being with us today. How you doing?
I'm doing pretty well. Thanks for having me, man.
Oh, no problem. Thanks for making time for us. You know, we've had the chance to talk to you. We just talked to you last week, along with some other reporters on the football media availability they had, and certainly talked to you a lot last season. Just kind of an obvious question for you to start things off. I mean, last season was obviously a huge breakout for you. You went from 7 tackles in 8 games as a redshirt freshman to 52 tackles, 10 tackles for a loss, 6.5 sacks last season. Yeah, I know you've talked about this before, but if you were talking to listeners now, I guess the obvious question is, you know, what changed for you? What clicked with that level of progression? Because you really, I mean, you had a fantastic season last year.
Well, I've always carried this chip on my shoulder since high school, you know, always being under the radar, the shorter guy, you know, I've always been, you know, overlooked. Nobody really seen my talent. So as soon as I'm able to get an opportunity under the field, I try to make the best of it. So like last year, I only had 7 tackles. One of the games I had, like, my first touch of like action was a TFL. So it was like, whether it's like 1 play or 2 play, I try to do whatever I can to make an impact.
Now, obviously, last offseason was a weird one for you guys. No one in the country like really went through what you guys went through. Jeff Collins, the guy that recruits you, leaves. Manny Diaz stays for, 18 days? And then Rod Carey and his staff come in. And I would imagine, like, they've got to build trust with you guys. And I would imagine that you guys are like, okay, just like with any coaching change, who are these guys? What are they about? How are they going to help us? How are they going to help me? What did those guys do to build trust with you and the guys on that team? Because, you know, you had a career year. Quincy had a career season. Even guys like Amir Tyler had a career year. So it looks like at least a lot of what they were doing, especially on the defensive side of the ball, worked. What did they do to build trust with you guys? And if you had to build, like, bring fans into that process, what's that like when a coaching staff has to build trust with you guys when they come in?
Well, for one, it's a lot of communicating. It's a, like, coaches come in, new staff, they have to learn the players' names. They have to learn the type of player that each guy is. And that's one thing that this staff really did help with, is communicating with us, having a conversation, learning about us. And that was just the first step in us getting closer. So that's one thing that the staff that really did good at doing, was communicating.
Earlier today, we had the chance to talk to Jeff Knowles, and I asked him about you. And, you know, he said that the sky's the limit for you. And I asked him if he thought or knew you would be this good this soon. And he pointed back to the spring, and he said, you know, once you started watching him in the spring, you saw some of the quick twitch stuff that you see now. I knew that there was something special there. What was your relationship again like? And we'll ask you, there's a question here about Walter Stewart, your D-line coach, but with Jeff Knowles, do you remember like some of those early spring ball practices that he's referring to, where you really kind of started to pop out to these guys?
Oh yeah, for sure. Because at the time I was battling for a spot with senior Karamo Diabate. And, you know, that's somebody who I look forward to. I have much respect for Karamo. And it was just like, it's fighting for that spot. It's like him, me and him is like, he's making me better each and every practice. So every practice I would go out there and just give him my all. And what Coach Knowles was talking about is seeing those flashes of like explosiveness, you know, high motor, because it's like something that I really want. Like, I wanted this and I worked for it. So I definitely see what he's talking about.
Hey, Ifeanyi, last week you mentioned that you were working on your stabilization and your hands and your feet. Can you take fans into what that looks like in terms of how you practice that? And what was quarantine like for you in terms of working out? Did you stay in Philly or did you go home?
I stayed in Philly. So I would go to a place called Novacare right there in Down Broad, where I work with Terry. You know, he works on my core strengthening, stabilization, and just getting my strength back to normal after, you know, of injuries. So with terms of hand placement, you know, I'll just punch a bag, or I'll have a guy stand in front of me and I'll have him, you know, either reach me or cut off. And it's just me training my eyes to see which block am I getting and using my hands to react to the certain type of block. So that's something how I would train. I was just, you know, because I'm like a reactionary player. I want to react also as long, and I want to react, but also know what play is coming and, you know, using my hands and eyes to put me in the best situation to make the play.
Hey, Ifan, what does a Jeff Knowles defense look like in year two? And with you guys having so much extra time to prepare due to the delay with the start of the season, does that help you guys just to react more and think a little bit less?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Because last year, they were getting to know us. We kind of just, you know, kind of chilled out a little bit, like play the backside of the block. Everybody's doing their job. But now that we're more comfortable with the defense, you know, they're letting it rip. They're having us, you know, just get out there and get after it. And now it helps us to like think less. And now we're just working more. And I like the defense. We're attacking everything, and we look really good this year.
You find we have some reader mailbag questions here, and these are coming from our owlscoop.com message board. So these are some screen names of people I'm going to read off to you. First question comes from Rockland Owl. And the question is, what did you learn from playing against North Carolina last December, and what can Temple fans expect from you this season?
Playing against a team like North Carolina, you have to play differently. The guys are bigger. You know, it's a higher platform. But it's basically about playing smarter this time. Like, you know what guys tend to do. You have to watch film. And when you're playing against, you know, an opponent with a like high caliber, you need to play smarter instead of, you know, just going out there. So playing a team like that, it taught me that, like, I need to, like, you know, get my football IQ up and to really study and learn these plays so that I'm able to be in the best position that I can to play against these teams.
Just a quick follow-up to that one. Obviously, there's the delay to the season. That's the lasting taste in your mouth. And you guys did. You went 8-4. You had a pretty good first season under Rod Carey. And then, obviously, they kind of took it to you in the bowl game. I know it sounds like the cliche question, but does that kind of grind around in your mind even more and say, I can't wait to get back on the field because we have to erase that?
Oh, yeah, for sure. I personally left so much money out there on that field, and I just feel like I got to get it. I need it all. Like, I got to get it back. And that tastes like a bitter taste in my mouth. Like, I need to come back way stronger than I did. I need to do more. I need to be healthy. I need to, you know, just get stronger and faster than I did last year. And that's the only thing that's been on my mind. So I'm just ready to attack it at this point.
Next question. The screen name is DBlaze75. Question is, what have you learned from Coach Stewart? And of course, he's referring to Coach Walter Stewart, your defensive line coach. How has he helped develop your game?
Me and Coach Stewart have a really close relationship. He's got me he made me become a better player based off my football IQ. You know, I've always been a guy that just kind of just plays off, you know, short will, you know, talent, athleticism, explosiveness. But Coach Stu, you know, has me. He tells me that it's good to go 100% all the time, but it's also good to, you know what's coming so that you can even make more plays and, you know, study the offense and know what formation is here and what plays is coming. So now that I'm able to, you know, read formations and know which plays is coming, on top of my athleticism and explosiveness, I can, you know, make more plays and get to the backfield quicker than what I've been doing from last year. So that's how Coach Stu really improved my game.
He found a follow up on this one too. I mean, when his name comes up, the guys just generally, and maybe I'm reading this wrong, your eyes just kind of seem to light up. Everybody has kind of really, really praised him and said, he's been great. He's been great. What is it about him? Is it just, do you just click with him right away? Is he just really personable? Does he know the right way to just kind of talk to you on and off the field? Cause it seems like this group has really clicked with him.
Yeah. He has a relationship with each and every player. Like, whenever you need help with something, you call Coach Stu. Whatever you need, you text him. And Coach Stu has almost been like sort of like a brother or a father figure to us all. And, you know, we want to play for that guy. Like, we want to, you know, just go out there and give it our all because he has a level of care and he wants the best for all of us.
Next question comes from the screen name Park Owl. The question is, last season you joined a long list of recent Temple players to go from under-recruited to NFL potential. Was that something that drew you to Temple in the first place, knowing that Temple had been finding diamonds in the rough for the past decade?
Oh, yeah. And like I said before, I told people this, that Temple was one of my dream schools. You know, like, I've known Temple for, like, its tradition. The guys on the team are gritty. They're going to get after it. And to see, like, Temple produce so much NFL talent, that like nobody's really speaking about, it drew me more to Philly and to the Temple team. And that's one something that I've had kept in the back of my head right there.
It, just a follow up to that one. Where does that, when you said Temple was your dream school, does it come from them kind of grabbing some guys from New York and North Jersey that were maybe overlooked? Like, you know, it's kind of, today's Temple fans might not know it, but Deion Dawkins was not really, he was kind of overlooked as a recruit, going as far back as a New York guy like Jaquan Jarrett, really under-recruited. They bring him in May, and he was one of the stars of Al Golden's staff. Were you kind of following along like some of the North Jersey, New York guys and watching them go down to Philly and have success?
Yeah, watching those guys too. But on top of that, it's the city life and the city of brotherly love. You know, when I came down to visit, the guys showed me so much hospitality. It felt like I was back in New York. You know, Philly has the same, like, similar city life to New York. And it just felt like I was home. Like, it was like a second home, to be honest. So I felt more comfortable here. And I felt like I could, you know, chill with the guys around on the team as well.
One more reader mailbag question before we get to a few more for you. This one, the screen name is Mission Man. His question is, how would you compare Lincoln Financial Field to other American Athletic Conference stadiums from a player standpoint? Also, you're going out with family and friends to celebrate after a big win in Philly. Where would be your favorite place to go? So he's got a two-part question here for you.
All right. So the Link is such a huge platform. You know, the Eagles play there. And it's like whenever you step on that field, there's like so many like great guys have stepped on this field and play. And it's like you have no choice but to follow in their footsteps and, you know, have a great game or ball out at the Link. And I would say, like, after the games, we celebrate. I should be getting cheesesteaks more, but I'm more of like a pizza guy. I guess I get it from, you know, being from New York so long. So I like Lorenzo's Pizza. Them huge, massive pizzas. And that's the first time I've seen a pizza like that huge, to be honest. And it was really good, too. So I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I'm going to ask you a quick follow-up on this one. I can't avoid a food question. If I'm going up to New York, I mean, they're like the big, like, tourist – I don't want to call them tourist traps because they're still good. There's, like, John's and all those places. Give us a pizza place in New York that you have to go to.
There used to be this place in Brooklyn called Family Pizza where the it's oven brick, and the slices were, you know, decent size as well. Grimaldi's is a good place. They have really good oven brick pizza.
Right by the bridge?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, very good place. At least I know.
Have you had L&B in Brooklyn?
You said what?
L&B.
I don't know too much about that place.
No, I got a buddy that lives around there, and that's like one of his favorite places in Brooklyn.
All right, Ifan, you guys obviously know what you lost in a player like Quincy Roche, and even some of the depth and experience you had with guys like Dana Levine, DeAndre Kelly, Zach Mesday, Karama Diabate, to name a few. What do you see from the next wave of defensive ends, like a transfer in Manny Walker? And Jeff Knowles mentioned Arnold Ibichetti today, so it seems like he's made progress as well.
Oh, yeah. Arnold's another guy that, you know, he just needed the exposure. And I believe that Arnold is going to have one of the most breakout years, you know, that we've seen. And he's going to be a great fill-in for missing replacement Quincy Roche. And Manny coming in, like I told you guys before, he offers a different style of pass rush, you know. And as they work their outside, it'll make it easier for me and Dan to, you know, try to make a plays. And as we dominate, it'll make it easier for Manny and Arnold to make plays. So I feel like we're just feeding off of each other. And I see flashes of, you know, promise when they play during team reps.
Just a quick follow-up. What have you seen from a guy like Leighton Jordan who's had to make that transition over from linebacker, and it seems like he's made it pretty naturally over to the defensive end position?
Oh, yeah, he adapted very well. Leighton's athletic. He's strong. And what I remember the UCF game, the one that I couldn't play, he actually had a strip sack against UCF, and I was like, wow, like, Leighton, he's going to be really good. So I'm just curious to see what he's going to do this year, and I'm looking forward to it.
And the team's also losing Matt Hennessy, a guy like Matt Hennessy, the NFL. Can you tell fans what you've seen from CJ Perez at center and maybe anyone else who's really stood out on the offensive line?
Oh, yeah, CJ's a great – he's a great player. He has great lateral quickness from left to right. He goes – like, he has a great solid base, and I feel like he's going to be, like – he's going to hold the O-line together. Like, he's going to be the glue of the O-line, along with guys like – Klein, who has made the transition to right guard. He has been showing, you know, flashes of improvement. And he seems comfortable at right guard, too. So I'm happy to see that he's playing a different position. Michael Neese, who just got in here, he very quick feet. He's good in open space. So I like how our O-line is coming together. Hooper, too, is a guy who's he's gained the weight. You know, he's a more solid guy. He's a little harder to get around. And Isaac Moore is making great improvements. You know, I remember last year, you know, he had some things that he wanted to work on. And it's great to see that he's coming after it. And also Vincent Picozzi, who's been, you know, he's out from an injury. He's trying to make an impact. He's also playing a new position, which is like left tackle. He's playing left tackle right now. And he's looking really good at it. So, you know, I expect big things from the O-line this year.
Fine. You were once that guy coming in as a true freshman, and you remember what it's like just trying to keep up with everything and make an impact. Now you're one of the veterans. Is there a guy that you've seen on either side of the ball, maybe in the way he carries himself off the field or just kind of making a play here and there, where you kind of look at the guy and say, he gets it. That guy's got a chance just based off of how quickly he's absorbing things right away.
Oh yeah. Is even some of the young guys like TJ and Jordan McGee, like young backers like that. I'm seeing like flashes of, you know, them, like their dominance and like their motor, and guys like even young freshman Kobe Wilson. You know, I'm seeing Kobe make reads and checks that, you know, you might see from like an older guy, and it's always good to see younger guys playing and with like playing like an older guy, because, you know, their window of like potential is so high already. And for them to start playing like this at this young age, it, you know, the future is bright for Temple.
Hey, Ifon, you mentioned that last week you had your eye on number 9. Is there any updates on when the team will do the next single-digit vote?
I'm actually not too sure about that. You know, I've been hearing a couple guys saying that I could get the number, but, you know, I've also been hearing that my other teammate Dan also wants the number 9. So it's, we have to like kind of like, you know, figure that out, battle it out, whatever needs to be done. But my eyes definitely have been set for that number.
What is that like for you guys? Because a lot of guys, I've been covering this program for a while, and when Al Golden came in and started it, there were some people who were like, how much is this single digit thing going to catch on? And now it's kind of cool to see that it really has caught on. Is it really as big a deal as you guys make it out to be? Because it seems like it is. And what are those conversations like? Like, you and Dan are both really good players and both have NFL potential. And if you guys both have your eyes on the same number, what's it like? Do you guys joke around about it? Do you just kind of, is that off limits where you don't talk about it? What's that like?
Me and Dan definitely do talk about it, talk about getting the same number or, you know, fighting for it. But at the end of the day, it's all work, you know. Real recognizes real. And me and Dan, if we got to do it, we got to, you know, make each other better and keep playing for it. But that tradition of single digit is just, you know, the guys who wear it, they're the most respected players on the team. They're the best players on the team. And it's like, you know, that's something that all of college football knows that Temple is known for, you know, single digit tradition. So it definitely holds a lot of weight here at the university.
Do any of the former number 9s ever just reach out to you guys kind of unprompted? Like, do you ever hear from Jacob Martin? Or I know I feel bad for Matt Ioannidis now. He just had season ending surgery. But do any of those guys kind of just reach back out to you, whether it's on Twitter or like call you or text you and kind of just check in on you where you're not expecting it?
Oh, yeah. You know, former number 9, Quincy, you know, I still have conversations with him now and then, you know, see how he's doing. Michael Dogby, me and him FaceTime every now and then. And he just tells me about his life and how the process has been crazy for him. So it's good to have like other, you know, single digit alumni to come back and give me their, you know, their just like tips and just talk to me every now and then.
Ifon, kind of a general question here, but what's something not a lot of people would know about you or something fans might not really know about you?
Okay. When I was in high school, you know, I didn't have not one, like going into my senior year of high school, I didn't have not one offer, I guess. And my first D1 offer was New Hampshire, which I originally committed to New Hampshire. And then, you know, things happened. And then sure enough, I decommitted and you know, chose Temple as a school. Yeah.
Ifon, I see you wearing that Nike sweatshirt. What, and know that they just, the jerseys just dropped a little bit ago. So what do you think of the new Nike uniforms? What's your opinion on them?
Man, I love it, man. I've always been like, I've always liked Nike, you know. Nike's just like, I don't know, it just has like a cleaner feel to it, you know. Guys want to wear Nike, and our jerseys look sweet, and I'm just excited to, you know, wear the Nike jersey again, back when I wore in high school. So it's nice to wear Nike now.
Is there one you prefer over the other? Do you like the white or red more, or just like both of them?
I like both of them, but if I would, I like the white, and I feel like I hope we are able to wear the white helmets, the all white combo. I think that would look really tough. So I'm looking forward to that.
Final question for you, and we really, really appreciate your time today. So obviously you were first team all conference last season. You're on a bunch of preseason watch lists. Everyone knows you have real pro potential and a likely NFL future. You know, you talked last week about how, you know, it's too early to talk about what you'll do at the end of the season, and we know that. But what's this like for you to have this much attention? I know you guys don't get the attention that guys at like Alabama and LSU get, but you know, we've talked about it. Temple's more, you know, been on the map for years now. For a guy that, you know, you just told this story of like, you were under recruited, you didn't have an offer going into your senior season, you had New Hampshire decommitted to them. What's it like now to kind of be in this headspace where, you know, even if you're a humble guy, you know, you can play in the NFL and that's going to be a possibility for you. What's it like to wrap your head around that? Did you expect this? And now that you have people talking about you, what's it like? Do you like it? Is it kind of weird? Is it a little bit of everything?
I definitely do like this. And I've definitely been feeling like I could, you know, I wasn't surprised with my level of play. Like, I knew that I could do what I could do, but I just didn't have the exposure. So once I got the exposure, like I said, I wanted to show people what they were missing out on. And that chip on my shoulder, it goes back to chip on my shoulder. Like, I just feel like I have so much to prove. And even though people be like, yo, E, like, you already got all these accolades and all that, I just feel like there's so much more I could have done. There's so much more. And I just feel like I need, and it's like, I don't know if it's me just being humble, but I just feel like I just have, you know, my potential is just, I can do so much and I can just be a way better player. So the tension has been, you know, it's good, but I don't let it get to my head. I just want to keep getting better.
One quick last thing for you is, was there ever a moment in practice, or maybe, I don't know if it was a game last year or whenever, where you made a play and you kind of like thought to yourself, I really feel like I belong, or this feels great. Like, I feel like, wow, like I kind of impressed myself here. Is there a moment that stood out that gave you like a huge boost of confidence where you're like, this is real. I'm really, you know, really progressing here.
I would say one of my best games was the Maryland game, where, you know, I had, you know, 6 tackles, 3 TFLs, and then 2 sacks. And that just made me wonder, it was like me playing against a big team, you would expect guys, you know, to like, you know, just not live up to the occasion. But like I rose to the occasion. You know, when we play big teams, I want to go all out. I want to show people that it doesn't matter how big of a team they are. You know, they step into the link and, you know, we got to put the gloves on. So it's definitely great, you know, seeing my talent just on the field. And it really is just like, wow, like this is what I've been working for all along. So it was good to see the fruits of my labor.
Ifon, thanks again, man. This was a lot of fun. I know you guys are entering Navy prep now. I imagine we might get the chance to talk to you next week or after the game. So good luck with everything. And we'll talk to you soon. Thanks so much.
Yes, sir. No problem. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Ifon.
A big thank you to Ifon Maje, Temple's standout defensive tackle. Guys, what stood out from the conversation to you?
All right, I'll take this one. You know, I think what stood out, definitely him talking about the offensive line, just there's a lot of moving pieces there. Obviously, like, you know, Ifon's a great kid, and the information that pertained to himself was great. But I thought that was just interesting to just hear that there seems like they're cross-training a lot of guys just because because of the contact tracing and COVID there. But, you know, that's not something that the coaches have told us. So it's interesting to hear that a guy like Vincent Picozzi is playing left tackle. You wouldn't really think that, but he's a versatile guy who's played, what, like 3 positions already on the offensive line. So what's a fourth? And then Klein at right guard is interesting. But just hearing him talk about, you know, him coming up in through the program and how Temple was like a dream school for him, and You know, there's another guy who's under recruited and under the radar, and you see he has a chance at getting a single digit number. So, honestly, like, not to sound cliche, but from just talking about him and knowing his story, he's kind of like what this football program is all about, is taking these under recruited kids and being able to elevate them to the next level. So, I don't know. It was pretty humble, and it was good talking with him. I mean, definitely the pro potential is definitely there. It's just like, as Jeff Knoll said, he's just got to take care of some things in the weight room and whatnot, and should be able to play at the next level, all things considered.
Yeah, I was going to say something along the similar lines of him talking about being under recruited. I mean, not having a single D1 offer going into his senior season. I mean, he had a breakout season last year. John, you had the numbers before about only having a handful of tackles the season prior, and then coming out and having like 50 plus tackles and a number of TFLs this past season. So having that breakout year and him feeling like that was always something I could do. I just kind of needed that opportunity, and him feeling like he was always, he wasn't always looked upon as that guy, but he always knew deep down that he was that guy. And as Sam was saying, like, you know, he has that NFL potential. It's just getting that opportunity, getting that chance.
Well, it's interesting that he mentioned when he was talking about early on, like coming through the ranks, and he talked about Karamo Diabate. And so obviously every year fans are hyper-focused on recruiting, and you know, it's a big deal if Temple gets a four-star guy, and it's kind of ironic that he talked about Karamo. Karamo was a Penn State commit, decommitted, flipped to Temple, and he's a Philly kid. And at the time, that was a big deal. And no knock on Karamo Diabate, but he ended up being a decent defensive lineman who really was kind of ended up being a rotational guy. And again, he was a four-star guy, a big recruit, one of the bigger recruits Temple's ever landed. And I think we can safely say that Ifeanyi Maajay is a better player and has an NFL future ahead of him. And every season we talk about this, we see it on the message boards. Fans will say, how come there aren't more four stars? What about this guy? What about that guy? And they still seem, and I get it, like untrusting of the process. Sometimes I get it. A fan base would be completely energized if there were a ton of four and five star guys, if you're beating out Alabama, but it's just not going to happen that way. But they beat out Penn State for a guy like Karamo, and they beat out New Hampshire. You know, again, like Ifeanyi said, it was basically like a no-brainer. And it just goes to show you, like, that developmental program thing, Sam, like you said, it's just kind of what the program's been about. And even though they have, what, 26 guys in the NFL, I don't expect that to change anytime soon. This is kind of what they do. And he's one of the guys that's next in line with that. And I thought it was interesting too that he's, you know, he said it before, he called Temple his dream school. You don't always hear that. And the more that guys put that out into the universe, certainly not a bad thing. Certainly if Temple wants to continue to recruit New York, you know, sometimes Brooklyn can be an under-recruited area for football. You know, getting guys from North Jersey, if you're going to continue to want to beat out Rutgers. But here's another guy, and it happens everywhere. Here's another guy that you know, Rutgers could have had, Syracuse, programs like that. And again, it happens everywhere. I'm not trying to like outright criticize all these programs. Recruiting is an exact science sometimes, but just interesting hearing him retell that story of Temple being his dream school. And again, you see the comparisons between him and another four-star guy. And now Temple has a guy who, you know, again, one thing I did want to ask him about, and we didn't get to, but we have a whole season to ask about it. I remember last week he said, you know, I'm paraphrasing here, well, we'll see what happens at the end of the year, whether I decide to enter the draft or look at some other options. So if he's looking at his future and he maybe doesn't want to enter the draft, does Temple have to try to hold on to him like they did with Quincy Roche? And is he the next guy that you might have to hold on to if, you know, all the sharks start circling and the Miamis and North Carolinas of the world and other programs that say, you know, we got to get this guy as a grad transfer, because he's, you know, he, again, unless he's hit with an injury or something like that, I mean, he's got a chance to be up there in the conversation with the conference defensive player of the year. So again, really good stuff from him. More football to throw at you guys. We talked to Rod Carey on Tuesday, and then going forward, he's going to be talking every Monday. That's going to be his regular media availability. So we talked to Rod Carey on Tuesday. We're recording this on a Friday. We got to talk to both coordinators today, Mike Yuremovich, the offensive coordinator, Jeff Knowles, the defensive coordinator. We're going to play a clip for you in a second from Jeff Knowles about Ifeanyi Maajay. So we had a story up on the site earlier this week from Rod Carey's media availability. He talked about a lot of things. Talked about how they, as of now, if you're Temple, you knock on wood, they're mostly healthy. You know, they really don't have any major significant injuries. They certainly have guys coming off of season-ending injuries, whether it's a guy like Onassis Neely, whether it's a guy like Vince Picozzi, who is coming back from a season-ending knee injury. And then he's also coming back, Rod said, from being in quarantine for 2 weeks and looks like, you know, getting moved around on the offensive line a little bit. We'd be a little surprised if he doesn't end up at one of the guard positions. But we'll play a couple clips from Rod Carey's session on Tuesday. This first one is him talking about how they do testing. We know fans are kind of curious about that. And here he's talking about how they had been testing once a week, then twice a week. And then during the season, throughout the season, they'll be ramping it up to three times a week. So here's a clip of Rod just talking about that, just so you guys have some insight into how that works.
Yeah. So really our last two tests, we've had zero positives. And we're starting to amp up our testing right now. So it was really a couple, two tests to go and then three tests to go where we had some that, you know, and really one, and then you can contact trace from there. But we had, I don't know how many, one or two, each one of those tests. And then that led to that contact tracing that gets that number pretty big, pretty quick. And that's been difficult. But in camp, since that test two times ago, that's zero. Guys have done a really good job. And some of that, you know, I have a real hard time saying, hey, good job, guys. We had zero tests, because we can do everything right and someone could still get COVID, you know. And so I hate touting that as like a, we're doing something no one else is. Shoot, everyone can do something right, so get it. So yeah, this week we're twice. So we tested Monday and now we're going Wednesday, tomorrow again. And then game week will be three times.
So one of the other things I asked him about too, among other subjects, was just about the special teams. And so we know that Will Mobley only missed three field goals last year, was pretty reliable, but he's never really hit from, I forget what his career long is, but he's never hit a 50 yarder. That's his one blind spot as a kicker. He doesn't have a super strong leg. Now, recently when he was made available to reporters, he feels, I believe he said he feels like he's got 50 yard range. We'll see. And of course we know that Adam Barry had his struggles last season. He hit the 7-yarder against Maryland that almost cost him the game. I guess we're splitting hairs here. You could go back and forth as to like who was to blame in the Cincinnati game when he took that low snap, took a knee that leads to a Cincinnati field goal. Those were some points that made the difference in the game. But he was dead last in the American last year in terms of average yards per punt. Now, Rod Carey has said that both guys have improved. Will Mobley's improved, Adam Barry's improved. But I asked him about you know, Will Leland and Rory Bell, two preferred freshman walk-ons, came into the program. Will Leland's from Ohio. Rory Bell is a local guy. No, sorry. Will Leland is from Souderton High School. Excuse me. Local guy from Souderton High School. Rory Bell is from Ohio. I asked if those guys could fit into the mix. And Rod had said, well, there again, here are two guys that are in quarantine right now and they'd spend time in quarantine. But I wanted to play this clip because it does give you some insight into how things are working on the kicking game. And you hear Rod Carey talking here and it sounds like a coach who is intrigued by what they can do and they, you know, could push these guys for their job. So we'll play this clip for you here so you can listen to it.
Yeah, they are, but Bell and Leland, then there again, you know, this is COVID world. So they went into quarantine and isolated from quarantine. So yes, the answer to your question is they're entrenched right now. We get those guys back, I think there's still good opportunity for some really good competition right there as the season goes.
Rod, do those guys, Rory and like, do one of them specialize in a certain area? Is one a better punter, one a better kicker? I know there's some versatility there, I think, but.
Yeah, there's versatility. Both of them have the ability to do both. Where I think that they can compete, John, is in kickoffs for us right now. And I would hope that Rory then could compete in field goals for us. He's probably a little ahead of Will, but Will, you know, he's a good player too. So it's good to have that versatility that we can do some things. But yes, Will and Barry have done a good job. And Will's gotten better and so has Barry. Probably haven't been pushed as much because they haven't had that daily competition, but certainly do see improvement.
So that's something to keep an eye on there. Again, I would be surprised if Mobley and Barry don't open the season as the starters, but they did bring in a couple of guys with strong legs. So we'll see how those position battles move along as the season progresses. Earlier, we talked about Jeff Knowles being available to the media today. We had Ifan Maje on earlier, of course, and I asked Jeff Knowles about, you know, what he saw from him when he came in. I just asked him, you know, did you know he could be this good right away? And you'll hear him saying here, no, I didn't know at first, but, you know, we saw something sooner rather than later that clicked. So Jeff Knowles, again, came over with Rod Carey from Northern Illinois as his, as his defensive coordinator. So here's Jeff Knowles talking about Ifan Maje, our guest from today.
When we first got here, no, I didn't expect him to blow up like he did, but that was before I seen him play. You know, you hear from guys when we got here, and there was a couple, you know, some guys that remained on staff, and, you know, you hear the guy has some potential and all that. But I remember spring ball last year and watching him run and bend the edge and seeing how twitchy he was. And we knew we had something special with him for sure. And fairly quickly. So, you know, his potential, sky's the limit. He's got some things that he just needs to keep playing football and get more reps. And he's going to be a really good player. And, you know, he takes care of himself and, you know, keeps hitting that weight room. I think he could be a really good one on the next level too.
All right. So again, we'll have plenty more football coverage for you. Next week is a game week. So we will have previews coming up. Again, weekly media availability. We're told that we'll get Rod. Reporters will get to talk to Rod again every Monday. Players on Tuesday, probably a handful of players there. And just so you guys know, a couple of you have asked what coverage will be like, what media access will be like. It's probably going to be one person at each game and then more reporters on Zoom. That's kind of how the sports media world is working right now, even in Major League Baseball and areas like that. So, but yeah, next week we'll have preview coverage of the game, Temple against Navy. Certainly an interesting scenario where Navy is, well, by next week, they'll be three games in their season, right?
I believe that is correct.
Yeah. So a Navy team that looked, you know, awful, and I feel bad saying that, but just, you know, if you watch them open up the season against BYU, they weren't tackling well, they weren't playing well. And then, of course, they come back against Tulane and you know, they've got a quarterback who can throw it. And that was a remarkable comeback for them. So interesting time for Temple to open the season again. But, and we'll talk about this a lot in the future, whether there are pluses and minuses involved on either side. So, but again, things amp up next week. We want to close things out with some basketball here. If you have not visited the site and have not subscribed to the site, I would encourage you to do so. We've got some good subscriber content up there for you guys. Latest piece we have up there is Sam Cohn's piece on Nate Pierre-Louis. Of course, you guys know him as Temple's former guard, graduated in 3 years, wants to pursue a future in the NBA. We kind of know that, you know, he's a long shot at best to get drafted and might end up playing overseas. But Sam, you talked to him this week and wanted you to kind of tease the story out to people a little bit. And I know he told you, you know, if I was solely focused on just playing overseas, I'd be there by now. He just wants to give the NBA a shot, but you know, you got some good stuff out of him. What was your conversation like with him, just to kind of preview it for our readers?
Yeah. So I think the biggest thing I got out of him was, I mean, you talked about it. He might be a long shot to make the NBA, but he's about as determined as anybody to make his dreams come true, to try to play professional basketball in the United States. And he added that, it's not like he's expecting to get drafted. He's not expecting to be in the conversation to get drafted. He's not even worried about the draft right now. He's just worried about getting in touch with teams, of which he's been in touch with two. He has had an interview with the Brooklyn Nets, and he's been in touch recently with the Denver Nuggets. His agent has been in touch with a couple teams and has been reaching out to teams, and the Denver Nuggets actually reached out to him. And so he's just focused on trying to get workouts to be able to make a roster. That's his biggest thing. And when I asked him, like, what's your goal? What's your plan when you look at the next couple months? He said he just wants a chance to make a roster and a chance to be able to ask, you know, veterans and ask guys in the front office and ask coaches and just absorb as much information as he can and learn as much information as he can. And that's really the biggest thing for him right now. As you kind of alluded to, like, he doesn't really have much interest in playing overseas right now. He said he has a couple of friends that have been working out overseas right now, and that's, he said he'd already be there by now if that was the case. So that's kind of the last thing on his mind. He's really just, you know, head down, focus, and being really patient about what's to come in the next couple months in terms of whether or not he'll be able to make, get a chance at making an NBA roster.
Yeah. So again, if you haven't checked out Sam's story, definitely do so. Some good stuff. And that kind of kind of transitions us into our last couple of mailbag questions here. They're both basketball related. The first one's from West Coast Al. West Coast Al's question is anyone standing out in preseason practice or workouts? So we'll tell you that we haven't had any basketball access yet. Obviously we're really just because of the pandemic, we're not really going to be able to, as far as I know, go to watch practices in person over at the facility, but hopefully we'll get on a schedule at some point where we're talking to Aaron McKee, maybe once a week, once every other week, and talking to some of the players. I mean, obviously you have some of the holdovers like JP Moorman, Dre Perry, but there's so many new faces on the roster. But Sam, I'll let you take this one, because one of the things you talked to Nate about and one of the real strengths of your story was just a lot of the good stuff that Nate gave you about taking a look at this roster moving forward. So I'll throw this over to you. You know, we haven't been there, but you get a sense of who's standing out and maybe who has some potential after talking to Nate.
So the three of us have had conversations about who we think kind of fits into that mold of who's going to be ready to play this season, who's going to stand out. So I got some insight from Nate about what he sees, because he knows the program better than any of us. He knows the vision that Aaron McKee's looking for in that offense. He knows a handful of these guys. I mean, when majority of these guys came in during this roster overhaul, we still weren't really sure if Nate Pirelli was going anywhere, if he was going to return. So he's been in touch with a handful of these guys. So a couple names that stood out to him, first and foremost, was Devondre Perry. Dre Perry could be a guy, in Nate's words, that's a guy that can take a shot in the clutch, a guy that's worked really, really hard. Going into his senior year, he's in a senior leadership position as a likely captain on this team, and he's a guy that could really step up and make an impact. We've seen him as a general stretch four, a guy that can knock down a three-pointer. Last season, I think his three-point percentage was a bit down from the season before. So he's a guy that can really knock down a shot. He's a guy that plays with confidence and a stretch four that can work well in an Aaron McKee fast paced, get up and down the floor type offense. Damian Dunn was another guy that stood out to him as someone that could really, he spoke really highly of Damian, as a guy that could be, you know, up for awards in the conference within the next year or two, as a guy that can really make a huge impact immediately. I mean, we really only saw half a game. I think he played 18 minutes, in the Tulsa game. Tulsa or Tulane?
Yeah, Tulsa. With that total.
Tulsa.
I mean, Tulsa's always just a road disaster for Temple, and it was this past season, of course.
So he got just 18 minutes of game time this past season, likely a medical redshirt. Nate expects him to come in this year and really be able to make an impact as a guard that can score the ball and can do a lot in that offense. A couple guys that he is looking forward to seeing this year is a good friend of his in Caleb Battle from the Jersey area as a sharpshooter transferring from Butler, and Quincy Adamakoya, who he said over and over again, he's going to be ready. He's going to come in. He's going to be ready to play. He's going to be ready to make an impact. And those are two guys that are shooters that can knock down the ball, that can Caleb more of a catch and shoot. Quincy, a guy that can create for himself and get up, rise above guys and knock down a jump shot. And something I talked about a little bit in my story is like those two guys, Nate feels like if he were to stay another year and if Quentin was able to be around another year, two guys who aren't necessarily amazing three-point shooters, super consistent, whatever, that he would be able to thrive in that offense with those two snipers. He said, you know, they did have Alonnie Moore, who's a solid shooter, but imagine like being able to add those two sharpshooters into that offense and a driving kick style offense would have been a lot of fun for Nate. Trying to think who else he mentioned. Oh, Jeremiah Williams is the last one that he's really excited to see. And he said he's probably going to be the most underrated guy on this offense and most underrated acquisition for this team. Nate sees a lot of himself in Jeremiah in terms of the way he plays. I mean, a lot of what we've heard from Jeremiah's coaches and from across the Temple coaching staff is that Jeremiah brings a Chicago toughness. He brings a dog mentality, which, as we all know, and this fans have seen for the last 3 years, that's who Nate is. He's a guy that gets after it at both ends of the floor. He's a defense. He's defensively. He wants to be the guy covering the best guy on the other team, and he's going to get rebounds. Nate said he plays a little bit of an unorthodox style play. The one thing that was really surprising to me that Nate said about Jeremiah was when I said, like, if you were to compare Jeremiah to a guy like Ty Strickland as a point guard, because we know that Ty's dealt with the shoulder surgery recently, we're kind of unclear on the timeline of his return. And Jeremiah could be potentially a guy that steps into that role if Ty isn't ready for opening day. How would you compare those two guys? And he said, Jeremiah is not a point guard. And not a point guard in the sense that Jeremiah would thrive in the off balls, playing off the ball as a guard and a guy that would play in a similar role that Nate did in the offense. Now, Jeremiah played point guard for a good majority of his high school career, and playing at Simeon, he was generally a ball dominant point guard. So I think that there is potential for him to play that position at Temple. But to hear Nate talk about how, like, that's more his style to play off the ball and to be a guy in that offense that can make plays, work off the ball and get shots for other guys, and just be a guy that gets after it at both ends of the floor, I thought was really interesting.
Yeah. And I mean, that'll be a really interesting thing to follow. And again, we want to be clear. We have not been in practice, haven't had access yet. I thought it was interesting. Again, this is just anything that anybody could see. Of course, the basketball program's official Twitter will send out video every once in a while. And Ty Strickland was featured in some of that video and workouts. Again, I have no clue to what degree he's working out, to which degree he's practicing. For all I know, he may just be going through some walkthrough stuff, going through some drills. Maybe he's not bringing the ball up over his shoulder, but if he is a full practice participant, that's obviously huge, because if the season is indeed going to start on time in late November and he's not ready, yeah, Jeremiah Williams or Jaleel White might be your starting point guard. So you're talking about a guy who, you know, obviously Sam just gave you a really good scouting report on the type of player he is, or a guy like Jaleel White from Wildwood Catholic who, you know, again, played a full season last season, is still working through just knocking off the rust of the, you know, the knee injury that he had in high school, but he's more of a 6'8" point forward. So that's going to be a big question they're going to have to answer. I think, like you said, they definitely add some shooting. You know, if Damian Dunn can stay healthy, Quincy Adam-McCoy can shoot it, Caleb Battle, those are going to be the guys that you really need to rely on, along with Dre Perry.
And Jeremiah is similar to Nate in the sense that he's a big guard. I mean, he's 6'5". I think he's 180, 185-ish. Mm-hmm. So he's a little bit bigger, and I think that's what Nate sees in him, is like to be able to be a bigger guard. They can defend bigger guys, and they can rebound the ball and can play a junkyard style of basketball. That's what we've heard from. I think Jimmy Fennerty was one of the coaches that said that, and Chris Clark and all the other coaches backed him up on that. And that's his style of play. Nate called it unorthodox, and it's similar to Nate, and that's the kind of style he's going to bring. I think although Nate said Jeremiah might catch some similar slack in terms of his jump shot, I think Jeremiah has a cleaner stroke than Nate and will come in and be a quicker transition to being able to score and being able the team being more comfortable with him pulling that three than Nate was. But I think they are. I do agree with Nate that they're similar players. The last thing I'll mention that I got from Nate in terms of scouting was about Ty Strickland. And I said to him, I was like, you know, if in the event that Ty can play, from what I've seen from him, he's a really shifty point guard. He's a guy that can facilitate an offense. He can get to the rim. And before I could even finish my sentence, Nate cut me off and said, yeah, he plays like Kyrie Irving. And that's something I think I've said to you guys a couple times. And I mean, not to make that comparison that he's Kyrie, but he has NBA blood in him. But Ty Strickland, his style of play is super similar to the way Kyrie plays in terms of a low center of gravity. He's got a really good handle on the ball. And to be able to facilitate an offense or be able to get to the rim is really impressive, just based on what we've seen from him in practice on the scout team last year, and what we've seen like warming up pregame and just kind of get a glimpse of his style of game. So to hear Nate kind of give a similar comparison, agree, I thought was really interesting.
There you have it. Some good basketball insight from Sam Cohn from Boston Sam. Our last mailbag question comes from Mission Man. This question reads, is the practice facility set up so that players could do their online classes? They're wondering about the amount of schoolwork they do in Pearson as compared to their living areas. Any feedback you can provide is appreciated. I have no idea. I mean, I can tell you, obviously, and you guys are Temple students, it's all but essential classes. Only the essential classes are in person. Everything else is online. I mean, look, wherever these guys can set up a laptop, they can take a class. Now, obviously, the Resnick Center is in the Pearson McGonigal Complex. I don't know how much in-person contact the guys have with the support staff over there, and they've obviously done a great job. You guys have heard all about Temple's APR numbers. So generally speaking, Temple has done really well with its student athletes. I don't know how much they're over at the facility. They do. I will tell you again, like just from a procedural standpoint, the Resnick Center, when you walk into the Pearson McGonigal Complex, it's right there on your left. And then you go up a couple of flights of stairs, you take the elevator up, and the basketball practice facility is on the third floor. So they do have their academic facilities nearby. Again, I would imagine that a lot of stuff is being done over Zoom, but how much they're actually doing in the basketball practice facility, I don't know. Interesting question, but one that we'll have to, ask Aaron McKee when we get access to him. And again, we'll have a lot to cover with him. And whether it's academics, of course, on the court stuff, a largely new roster that Sam gave you a pretty good rundown on. And so we'll have more basketball for you in the future. Thank you to all of you for your mailbag questions. Big thank you to Ifan Maje for joining us on the Scoop this week. We got a golf outing this week, guys. Tomorrow we're going to be hitting the links. We'll talk some golf to close things out. I won't say much because I'm
so excited.
Not very good.
Yeah, so, I'm not very good either.
I'm scared to say I have a slight leg up just because I played last week and we had talked about me and Ray going to play last week. So I have 9 holes under my belt going into tomorrow, but
Not to brag. It cracks me up when Sam Newman says not to brag or anything.
No, I like to brag.
So we got
very pro bragging.
Yeah, so we're recording this on Friday afternoon. We'll be playing tomorrow, unless the weather's changed. What are we getting? 65 and sunny tomorrow, guys?
It's beautiful tomorrow.
Yeah, so we're playing at Walnut Lane Golf Course up on Henry Avenue in Roxborough. Not a official sponsor of the Scoop, but here we are giving them a shout out. I've played there a couple of times. It's, again, there are people who are so much more knowledgeable about golf than I am, and are certainly so much better playing golf than I am. But if you guys haven't played there before, it's not bad. If you guys play in the future, I think it's the closest, nicest, cheapest course in terms of like from where you guys are at Temple. So I'm looking forward to it.
I have not played there, but you want to hear something interesting about me and golf?
I always want to hear interesting stuff, Sam. You go right ahead.
The first sporting event that I ever covered doing any sort of journalistic anything was a golf tournament. I was in 9th grade interning, like over the summer interning. Wait,
you had an internship in 9th grade?
At a local radio station.
Look at this guy. Sam, this
is a serious not to brag thing.
Yes, right, I was going to say, wow.
We got
a journalism Doogie Howser on our hands here.
I did.
You didn't even get
spinners. Right. No idea.
Patrick Harris, Doogie Howser, like child doctor. Never mind.
Anyway,
sorry.
I did some Lowell Spinners baseball, which is the minor league affiliate of the Red Sox. And then I did like, but the first thing I did was I went to a local golf tournament. And I like called in on the radio and like, I like followed around a couple of the guys, took some notes, and then I called in and would give updates every like half hour about what was going on.
It's a local radio station was playing updates from a 9th grade you.
Yes.
You have calling. Clips? Do you have these clips? Please tell me you do. Cause if so, we're going to play them.
I wish, but I don't. I have no idea where I would even go to find them.
Sam, do we believe him?
I believe him. I don't know what his voice sounded like back then. So I don't know if he wants to share it with us or not.
God, I can't imagine.
Hi, this is Sam on the 9th hole.
I can't imagine a 9th grade John DeCarlo covering a golf tournament. It would have been
know much about golf then, but I did my research on what I had to know. And I would call in and be like, you know, this guy hit one dog leg right down the, about 150 yards. He knocked like tire, just give shot by shot update. Like, just give updates.
Yeah. So Walnut Lane is the favorite course of John Chaney, Temple's former Hall of Fame basketball coach. And
we're playing in his honor.
I played there a couple of times. I think Sam, was I telling you this story?
Yes.
That I played there in college. So you can take, I guess you can still take golf as a Temple student. Took it as a senior.
I hope.
And for most of the semester, we just hit wiffle balls in McGonagall Hall. Mm. And you took quizzes. I took that class with Pepe Sanchez. And I will tell you that Pepe Sanchez went to that class more than I did. And I remember talking to, yep. And I liked it, but a couple of times. So I was like, you know, fully engrossed in like working for the Temple News. And you guys know that battle as student journalists where you're like,
yeah,
I got to pay attention to my academics, but I got to make sure I get work experience. And there were a lot of times where I was working on something on deadline, and if I had to cut a class, golf was usually it. And I remember sitting on the hardwood floor next to Pepe Sanchez, and I would crack up because Pepe was a really smart guy and a really good dude. And I would look at him and say, you're here more than I am. And I remember him saying, the coach he'll kick my butt if I'm not here every week. So, and that's probably
so we have it on record that Professor John DeCarlo did in fact skip class in college.
Oh God. Yeah. Yeah. I'm not here to be honest with you guys. I'm not going to say I never skipped a college class. So, You know, you just got to be honest with your instructors, right? I just tell people, like, if you're sick, just drop me an email in advance. What do I tell you guys? Don't tell me 3 weeks later that you were sick.
Yeah. I used to skip John's class all the time. I used to never go to John's class.
You were there every week in the front row.
I'm just kidding.
Both of you.
Terrible lie.
Yeah. And our, I remember on playing with him. So this had to be what, I guess, like the spring of 1998.
65.
Okay, go ahead. So somewhere on like the seventh or eighth hole. And it was a shorter, distance, like something like 150 yards where you didn't need a driver. Mm-hmm. And I hit, when I tell you that, I mean, there's a slice, and then I wouldn't even tell you what I did, which was like, I literally just hit the ball directly over to the right. It pinged off a trash can, almost hit somebody. And I immediately like became George in Seinfeld. I was like, I'm out. Like, and my instructor was like super nice. She was like, John, we got one more hole to go. We're playing nine holes. I was like, I can't bring myself. I was like, I'm going to kill somebody. And she kind of started laughing because she couldn't really argue with me. She's like, just play that last hole. I was like, am I allowed? She's like, yeah, you'll be okay. So I'd like to think I've gotten a little bit better since then, but not much. So it'll be the three of us and Ray Dunn, another Temple student, WHIP sports director,
friend of the podcast.
Friend of the podcast, Ray Dunn. So yeah, hopefully it'll be fun. And then we'll,
I can't wait.
But it'll be you guys making fun of me
next. Good. Please, you'll be making fun of me. God, I'm a terrible golf player.
I don't know. So we'll see. Hopefully it'll be fun. And we'll have some – I won't have any golfing insight, but you know, if I hit like three or four good shots tomorrow, we'll be in good shape. So
that's all we need. So, just walk away with one shot. Like, that was good. That was good.
One shot. More than one shot, I don't know. All right, so that'll do it for this week. Thank you for sticking around for our unprompted golf chat. Hopefully we'll have a good time tomorrow and I won't shoot anybody's eye out with a terrible shot off of a trash can or anything like that. And again, thank you to Ifan Maje for joining us. Thank you to all of you for listening and we'll talk to you next week.